Trying.
I'm overlapping, but it's all intentional.
Talking.
Does this sound?
Is this better?
Things are gonna get easier.
I'm not saying I'm gonna change the world. I do guarantee that I will spark a brain that will change the world. Welcome to the Mookie Mel Show. Excellent episode 10 in store for you all. I just wanted to reiterate that the Wait a Second Wednesday video is live and out. Please check it out. It's on the fan page via Facebook. We're also on YouTube. So just search The Mookie Mel Show or Wait a Second Wednesday. But today we have race and social stigmas as the topic. We're taking it there. This should be a great conversation, a lot of dialogue. I know our new listeners or current and remaining fan group may even have some ideals, conversation, or different opinions in terms of some of these topics and discussions that may follow. So please voice your opinion. Again, let's respect others' ideals, perception, and their reality. I got something I want to read real quick. And then I want to introduce one of my near and dear friends to me in my new home city of San Antonio, Courtney. She's definitely going to bring some great insight, a lot of personality, and even an interesting perspective. But let me read this off real quick and let's have some good dialogue. The ideal of race and social stigmas directly correlate. When an ideal of a certain group is told enough, it becomes fact. Race is often the first indicator that individuals have amongst themselves, whether intentional or unintentional. This is a daily interaction. So let me introduce y'all to the lovely Courtney. Court, talk to the people.
Hi, I'm Courtney. I'm at Miles here working for UPS. We had the same training class together. I started working there shortly after I graduated from UTSA, which is the University of Texas at San Antonio. I got a bachelor's in English literature. I'm not a grammar Nazi or anything like that, but I really enjoyed that. And other than that, I just kind of have grown up in San Antonio and haven't gone anywhere else besides this, but that's about it in a nutshell.
Awesome, Court. I appreciate it. Okay, well, cool. Let's jump right into S1 and scholars. So, Court, I know you're from San Antonio and born and raised, but can you tell me a little bit about your educational background or how it was for you growing up? Did you go to public school, private school? Did you like school? Did you go to black school, white school? You know, fill me in. Just give me a little snippet of your life.
Interestingly enough, in elementary school, I was homeschooled and I went to like different co-op programs and like played different kind of sports with those groups and things like that. And then when I was in middle school, I went to private school, and then I went 7th grade to public school, and then 8th grade, I moved back to San Antonio. We went out like to like an outside town for a little while, and then in high school, I stayed in that same area of my 8th grade middle school, and we were like maybe middle class. My high school was more middle-lower class, somewhat. We had a primarily black and Hispanic school, I would say, probably. And I felt like it was a really, really good school. I felt like I got a good education. There was a ton of programs that we could go into. Like, I could raise a sheep at school. I could join, like, different, like, computer engineering programs that would get me specific certifications, like, as soon as I graduated high school. And so we had different opportunities like that in grade school.
So for those of you who don't know, San Antonio, for the most part, is pretty Hispanic. There's a prevalent white culture also. There's also, you know, other races in general, but the Hispanic population is the majority out here. So that's why I was curious what kind of school Court went to. But she said she was raising sheep. That's crazy. That's a different type of education. But that's awesome. So public school, Court, kind of elaborate on what your experience of public school was. Because I know you said you went to private school. Well, you did everything. You went from homeschool to private school to public school. And I'm just curious, can you tell me about public school and kind of what that meant to you, especially at the age you went?
So I'd say the most distinct year that I remember as part of my education in grade school was when I was in seventh grade. I had transitioned from sixth grade in private school, and I transitioned into the local public middle school. And like, we weren't even allowed to have lockers. Our backpacks had to be see-through. It was one of the lower income schools in the city. And it felt like it was a lot different, and it wasn't quite as enriching because it was a lot more militant in a lot of ways. So it made like learning structures a lot more rigid and like policed rather than like free thinking and things like that. So it was I remember the most distinct learning environment I remember having.
Wow. I was not expecting you to say that, Court. So I get it. Well, I don't get it. I didn't go to a school like that. But I do get and understand hearing the militant and almost feeling, you know, you're not necessarily there to learn, or you almost feel like an inmate. But how do you think being homeschooled initially, then going to private school, kind of shaped and changed your opinion on public school? Was that what you were expecting, or was that completely different? Or, you know, what was your thought process in entering a public high school of the nature you were in, the environment you were going into?
Well, being homeschooled was interesting because I hated it because I was a social butterfly as a kid. But as far as the learning aspect of it, being homeschooled gave me the advantage of always being always being given affirmation from somebody about my thoughts. I was always validated every single day on a one-on-one basis. And so then I'm taught that my thoughts are important, the way I reason is important. And so then I go into private school where then I'm treated delicately, like life is delicate, can't let you cross too many boundaries, we're going to kind of protect you. And then I went into that very distinct experience in seventh grade, and it made me feel invalidated, or it made me feel like I was always like up to something, even though I wasn't, you know? So It took away some of that confidence in a way.
Yeah, that's crazy how the structure or your instructors can sway almost your educational experience. Obviously, it seems like you're in a bit of a different environment, but how much was that environment brought from other influences, you know, like from feeling like an inmate? How much would someone act like an inmate, you know? And I think that in itself is powerful. So did you go into public school with any social stigmas or kind of stereotypes of public school or some of the kids you may interact with there?
I had this idea that I was going to be walking down the hall and just see like all these kids making out or something. I don't know. And I thought that, you know, there'd be like food fights or that I would just be able to wear and do whatever I wanted, but that wasn't true.
So when was your perception kind of like an aha moment when you realized, okay, my social stigma of public school is not reality?
I would probably say that somewhat started to sink in a little bit when I was in seventh grade and I went into public school for the first time, but like more like towards the end of the year after I had gotten to speak with a bunch of kids or whatever and get to know different people. And it's like, oh my goodness, that's just another human being over there, you know? So I'm not different than you or anything like that. So that was just a big wake up call because, you know, you just think you're different than other people going into the public school system, not having been there before.
So what did some of your interactions and new relationships kind of break in terms of your perception of certain races or groups of people? Because it sounds like, obviously, you know, initially you were initially kind of a little fearful, or not even fearful, I'm putting my own words into your mouth, but you know, you were expecting kids to be kind of kissing in the hall and this, that, and obviously it's high school, so I'm sure that was happening. But what, you know, kind of changed your perception? What was your reality? When did you have I guess my question is, when did you have an aha moment that these people may not be whom you thought they were?
The more I really think about it, I think I started to become prepared for that awakening, I guess, as you would call it, throughout middle school and a little bit into high school. But I didn't truly have that aha moment until I was probably a sophomore in high school. And I remember this one girl in particular who just like had a bad home situation, like parents never there, and just different stuff like that. And I got to see how she sort of dealt with that. And it just like all made a lot of sense to me, because in that moment I realized, oh my goodness, how different would I be if I was dealing with that right this second? I mean, how different would my outlook on the world be? How different would my response to authority be if I didn't even care about the authority in my home? Like, I mean, what on earth would I be like if I didn't have my life? And that, gosh, just opened a lot of different avenues in my mind in terms of what experience does to people. You can't ever have somebody else's experience.
Yeah, that's powerful in itself, Court. You know, like I often say, perception is reality. And, you know, my perception of my reality or what's going on in my life is going to be so different to anyone whom else is looking into my life, you know. So for maybe, you know, some of the kids that attended your private school, if their cell phone broke, that might have been an issue. But, you know, some of the kids that go to your public school, they're like, well, I don't know where I'm supposed to order this book from, because they don't have a computer or they don't have a cell phone. So it's just different understandings of what's an issue to somebody. Well, awesome. Thank you, Corey, for sharing your educational experience. But let's jump right into S2 with sports. So obviously, race and social stigmas directly correlate, and sports and social stigmas directly correlate. You know, obviously, a lot of times, majority of the times, minorities are expected to play sports, or when they're in college, if you're a large minority, what team are you on? Or even growing up, oftentimes larger kids are asked, why don't they play sports? So that's just a everyday social stigma we have on race. So Court, I guess my question to you, were you ever an athlete?
Yes, I played various sports growing up. Throughout like elementary school, I played soccer, softball. I played a little bit of volleyball and basketball. And then into middle school, I narrowed it down to basketball and volleyball. And then I played volleyball a little bit just before and into high school some. And then I played some softball in college too.
Wow, you're just an athlete, a hooper, a skilled full star of the sorts. You do a little bit of everything. Okay, you sound like me. But so obviously you had interactions with all types of people, especially with your different schooling experience, homeschool, private school, public school. You meet kids from all different types of socioeconomic standings, backgrounds, lifestyles. So how would you say, or what would be a good way for some of these kids or minorities whom you did play sports with to kind of turn the social stigma or use it to their advantage when playing sports?
I would say concerning the negative stigmas, to use them as motivation more than anything. I had one friend in middle school in particular I played basketball with, I think, And she always used the negative stigmas against her that, you know, because of her education or because of her family background, that she wouldn't succeed in school, for instance, was one of her big things. So that was the big stigma against her. And so she thought, well, you know, I know that's not true within myself. Like, I know I'm pretty smart and I know I can figure stuff out. So I'm going to just do me and then also, meanwhile, prove all these people wrong. And so it was like it relaxed her almost a little bit to think about it outside the box like that. And it's like a matter of stepping back, I guess, was the biggest thing for her.
No, I get that. And I think I can speak on personally. I understand how hard it is or easy it is to sometimes get caught in social stigmas or society. I remember growing up, I only cared about basketball. I only was a hooper when I had so many other opportunities provided for myself, which I didn't necessarily take full advantage of because I honestly only cared about basketball. And looking back at it, I question or I ponder, you know, obviously, yeah, I enjoyed it and I liked it, but why didn't I necessarily put effort in some of these other vessels that I had an opportunity to? And I do think I kind of succumbed or, you know, I conformed to society to some extent. And it's easy. It's I promise you, it is easy to do. So, Court, I appreciate your input as an athlete of all athletes. I didn't even know. But let's jump into our final topic in S3 of social. So, Court, in your own words, what is race?
So I actually took an anthropology class for, you know, race and culture or something like that, actually, the last semester I took in school. And we defined race as a social construction in a lot of ways because there's no genetic composition directly for like a white Caucasian male, whatever, in the United States. There's not a direct genetic code for, you know, and like anybody, any people group. So it all started when people were dividing people based on like some kind of social caste. So therefore it's socially determined.
Right, right. And I get it. And I understand that. And I, you know, technically that's all true when you learn that in class. But socially, and to you, what is your definition of race?
Pertaining to like the social part of it, I guess you could say race defines what you're allowed to socially do or how easily you're allowed to socially do something.
Right. And I get that. So do you think race is as simple as we make it seem to be on the tax test? Just bubble a letter to identify, you know, could I be part Alaskan if I wanted to? Or Native American, or even white, you know, like, is it possible or do you think it's fair for people to kind of self-identify with other races or how does that work? Like, do you get what I'm asking, Corp? How do we choose what race we are? Or is that a privilege that only certain races are able to obtain? Is being able to select your identity something everyone's able to do? Do you truly have to be mixed or, you know?
The important thing to remember when pondering on this kind of thing is that race itself is a system. That's why we have words like racism, because it has to do with this system. And if one is white, you're outside of that system because essentially your ancestors constructed that system. So you can't really claim anything inside those categories because you're forming them to be outside of them. And then each of those categories are experiences based on that system you constructed, essentially. And so even just like narrowing somebody down to just Asian or Hispanic or non-Hispanic, that's complicated too, because if you're raised by a Hispanic mother and then a Black father, then like you have two different experiences working to raise you. And so not only do you have like the broader categories, but you have the mixed experiences that then with mixed with other mixed experiences. Race is like so fluid sort of in that way because there it's not just grossly separated.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I think I 100% agree with you. There's no clear cut line to anybody's true lineage except pretty much their skin color or, you know, their different facial features or things of the nature. But race is just such an interesting topic. But speaking of topics, is there a difference between social stigmas and race? And if so, could you kind of elaborate on them, Court?
So I wouldn't go so much toward a difference as I would say that social stigmas are essentially the backbone which keep up the system of race. And so those stigmas are necessary in supplementing what is that foundation of race, you know? So, yeah, they're kind of connected in a way, I think.
Okay, I hear you. I hear what you're saying. So there's a direct correlation between social stigma and race. And I agree and I concur. So what would you say some of the benefits or even negative factors of being a white young female?
Well, to start off, I don't have to worry about as much in public as literally any other woman in the world. I don't have to worry about being suspected of anything or looking a little shifty, you know. I'm seen as like outgoing easily instead of loud, right? I'm outgoing and things like that. And I'd say one of the maybe difficult things about being a female would be just like being female. But other than that, like being white almost makes everything a lot easier in a lot of ways.
No, I hear you and I respect that, Court. I definitely can appreciate your word choice too as well. But so elaborate on that though. What would you say are some of the daily effects of being a white female? You know, as you said, what are some of the daily occurrences you go through, whether it's good or bad, you know? Can you tell us about that?
One thing I've personally experienced a lot, and I don't know if that's specifically because I'm a white female or just because of the parents I had, I don't know. Like, I was always raised being expected to sort of stay home with the kids, you know? And that's not what I want to do. Like, I want to have a career. And so there were different expectations like that like you should get married really young or, that I should not be like putting as much time into school if I have a guy that's interested in me because you don't want to waste that chance. Things like that, things centered more around like marriage or family or being some kind of homemaker. That was something a lot of the people I was surrounded with focused on. I even remember one Christmas, I got a subscription to like cooking magazines and stuff like that. And so I kind of got the picture, but yeah, it's a lot of that, at least of what I've experienced.
So elaborate on that, Court, though, from your experiences, kind of how you grew up shape your social stigmas on society, you know, how'd you figure those and what was your perspective on those and what was your views on race then growing up?
There's a lot of different rabbit holes, I guess I could go down with that question, but I guess one of the avenues we could go down would be saying, like, because I see a lot of white women like myself staying at home with their kids, it means us in general, we have it figured out. And since you don't see as much representation like that with other races or people groups, then like that means they don't have it figured out. Like, and things like that, it was very us versus them. And so you feel almost different than like that you don't have any of the same experience or relate in any type of way. And it's like this distancing when you're closed into that one reality, you know, that happens, because if that's what I'm supposed to do and that's the best thing, why isn't everybody else doing it? And you have to answer those kind of questions for yourself.
You're right, Court. That definitely was a rabbit hole question. I appreciate your response. But I do also appreciate you understanding that, one, it's easy to conform in what you're instructed to do. And at times, you know, following instructions is right. But other times you do have to question them. And you do need to question, you know, what you want in your own life. And as I said earlier, it often can be easy, you know, from my personal experience, to conform to society. On a lighter note, or a different note, or let's make a left turn. I know, also know, Court, from you and I being friends, that you're in an interracial relationship. And how do you feel that different social stigmas affect your relationship?
One example, for instance, would be that I have in, like, I've dated a white guy before, right? And never once when I've ever dated somebody that was white did I ever, like, worry about them very much when they weren't with me, you know? But almost naturally, because it's so obvious that it happens, I worry about him, like, whenever he's at work. Sometimes he has to walk around downtown. And that always scares me, because it's like, what if the wrong cop is out there and they want to, you know, just be that cop that night? And that kind of thing I think about on a daily basis, whereas that was never something I ever thought about before or worried about. So that's been a huge difference for sure in being in an interracial relationship from my perspective.
Yes, definitely social awareness has been brought by police brutality due to a lot of social media, technology, i.e. cell phones, and it's. I'm glad that's finally being brought to light. But yeah, I definitely hear you. Shoot, I told my brother one day, I was like, I used to work at a bar. I was like, when I get scared, who am I supposed to call? Like, when I'm walking home at 3 a.m., what is going on? Like, you know, and it's crazy, because oftentimes I knew that was a social stigma I would fall to. You know, as a black male, you almost feel you're not supposed to ever be afraid, or you can't cry, you know, and at times, that's exactly what you need. You know, maybe being afraid will save your life, or maybe being afraid will keep you from making a dumb decision. So I can appreciate that, Court. Along those lines, though, what do you find to be the most challenging part of being in an interracial relationship today with some of the current social stigmas?
Well, I mean, going back to how we began initially talking about what race is, it's a lot of having to do with experience. And so he and I will never have very similar experiences as it pertains to how we literally function in the world and see it. And so that alone creates, I guess, a difficulty in understanding one another. His family dynamics were different than mine growing up, and so that makes him this type of communicator, or it makes him understand things this way. And it's really difficult sometimes to step back and have to think about it, because you have to, right, if it's not what you naturally think like. And so it has taught me, though, to further introspect and, like, examine myself in conflict, and so it's been a good growth experience, too.
I could dig that, Court, and that's why I love you. But awesome. Well, everyone, that's going to conclude today's episode of the Mookie Mel Show. I greatly appreciate you, Court, for coming on the show. This was an excellent show. Y'all, we had many technical difficulties, but you'll never know. Court was a phenomenal guest. I really appreciate her patience and energy throughout her time. Jay, go ahead, the people with the facts, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So what's up, everybody? I freaking love that episode. I thought Courtney was really good when she explained race and that class, man, that was, I want to take a class like that, a race and culture class like that, because she has a really good understanding of race and the system. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode like I did. I'm going to keep this brief. I just want to reiterate what Miles was saying about the Way to Second Wednesdays. Go check that out. We are on YouTube now. We're going to keep uploading our YouTube videos to that channel, so please go check that out. It's just called The Mookie Mel Show, like everything else. That's about it for me. Hope everybody has a good week. All right. Jay out. Mookie Mel Show out.